Choose one would place her IQ rating very, very high indeed. She is brilliant. The other representative is Miss Tade Linker, and she is a Blue Point Siamese. She is exceptionally kind-hearted and most maternal. She comes into my room at night and really looks after me, and they both are the finest of all companions during the long, sleepless hours of darkness. Never let anyone say that humans are superior to animals, for these two, Cleopatra and Tade Linker, have personalities which in a human, would raise them to sainthood, and that is truly meant. Another person writes, "In one of your books you imply that the Christian religion is breaking down, and there will be trouble in the Vatican in years to come. Don't you think the Christian religion will conquer all?" Actually, it's not what I think, that doesn't matter. What does matter is, what is present in the probabilities. And according to the Akashic record of probabilities, the Christian religion will pass away. Already Christians, I am a Buddhist, are saying that God is dead, or God doesn't care, or some such rot. But God is God no matter what you call him. There is a supreme being no matter what you call him. A great weakness of Christianity is that Protestant fights against Catholic, and Catholic fights against everything else, and they are all so frightfully sure that there is no way to heaven except through the door of their own particular little church. The record of probabilities says that before too long the Christian religion will end and a completely fresh religion will come into being. Many people believe that there are more Christians than any other religion upon this earth. That is nonsense which can be shown by visiting any public library and consulting a map which gives comparative religious numbers. The Christian religion will end, then, and a completely fresh religion will take its place in which some of the priests, most of the priests, will have a far greater understanding of people than do the present Christian priests, who are scared stiff to discuss anything and who can only talk in platitudes or parables. It's easy for a priest, with an absolutely assured income, to prate on to some poor impoverished sufferer about, "God will provide." But it's not so easy when you are the poor impoverished sufferer. With the next religion there will be many, many improvements. About time, too, isn't it? In passing, and this is entirely my own comment, I really am highly amused about the Salvation Army. These people used to be wonderful to the poor, but my own personal experience is that they are not so wonderful now. Now you get little men and women who, to me, seem to be arrant hypocrites lording it over those who have had some misfortunes. I am not know what it's like to be forced to live for a short time in a Salvation Army hostel and to have a little squirt of a man order me about. I know what it's like to have a little runt squeal, "Sing, my man, you have to sing and pray before you have your soup." Let me repeat that many years ago the Salvation Army did wonderful things for the poor, but during the last 25 years they seem to have changed such a lot that it's about time they were disbanded and set to digging ditches, or something, so they would know the other side of the coin. That is my personal opinion based upon more than one actual personal, painful, experience of the Salvation Army. Reference to an army of any kind, good, bad, or very indifferent, brings our next question into its logical position. A questioner wrote, "What is wrong with this world? Why have we failed? Where have we failed? How is it that everyone's hand is against everyone else nowadays? Can you explain that?" Yes, I think so. I think there is no problem in explaining actually. It's a breakdown in discipline. An army is only an army so long as it has discipline. When discipline fails, an army becomes a rabble. But, let us look at it rather more closely. Every person, every community, whether it be a hamlet, a village, a town, a city, or a country, and every world also, has a choice of the right path or the wrong path. It's like a continuous examination. Do people know the answers? Can they make the right decision? The right choice? Can they take the right path? Well, the poor old earth took the wrong path, and what could have been the negation of the age of Kali in which all the horrors, frustrations, etc., of the age of Kali would have been cancelled out, instead of that the earth took the wrong path and the age of Kali is upon us in full force. This is how it started. In 1914 World War I began. Men were sent to the fighting forces, and because of avaricious munitions makers and others of that ilk, women were beguiled into cutting their hair short, putting on trousers and entering the factories, taking over the jobs formerly held by men. Women went to work, women sought what they blithely called equality with men. And what utter nonsense that is! Men and women are different. No man has ever produced a baby, and no woman has ever fathered a baby. They are quite different. Each designed for their own purposes in life, an evolution. The job of the woman was probably far more important than that of men. Women had equality, women have always had equality. The supreme job of women was to look after the family and to train the children to be good citizens and good people. When the woman was at home looking after the family, the world was a far better place. There were less crimes, less strikes, less civic disturbances. Women stayed at home, maintained home discipline, and saw that the rising generation had the necessary training and the necessary discipline with which they, in turn, would take over. But then women entered the factories, entered the shops, they drove buses, did everything. And what happened? Young children were shoved out into the streets to play, to look after themselves. Young children, almost as soon as they could totter, were left to fend for themselves and go to a drugstore for a hurriedly snatched meal. The weaker characters among these young people, these quite young children, were soon dominated by stronger and harder and more vicious characters in the community. Soon children were racing about in gangs like pack rats. There is no longer a respect for law and order. A policeman is an object of derision. Everything is done by children to break the law. They lie, they steal, they gamble, and their sexual precociousness makes one wonder what is to happen next. Parents no longer have any real authority over their children. Children stay out at all hours of the day and night, they are not responsible to anyone. These children flaunt the authority of teachers, and they behave like mad things. They grow up to be gangsters and assassins, and, in my considered opinion, the whole responsibility is that of parents who are so busy amassing money that it is an economic necessity that husband and wife both work, and thus the children, the future race, are neglected. As husband and wife both work, there is more money available, so manufacturers put on extra shifts of workers to make more goods, to take some of the surplus money. The goods are carefully made so that they last a certain predictable time only, or utterly lying advertisements preach that it is absolutely necessary to have this or that product to be in. Cars are altered year after year in only their tiny details. They are altered to make last year's cars completely obsolete fashion-wise. Yet, underneath there is the same old clonker rattling along, the same old engine which really hasn't improved much over the years. All that matters to people now is, are they keeping up with the Joneses better? Can they go one step ahead of the Joneses? The world has gone mad, and it's all because men and women want to take a country and squeeze it like a lemon. Here in Canada, a member of the Mail Carriers Union, or whatever they call themselves, who have gone on strike causing distress and hardship for many because they want a 30% increase in their already lavish wages, has gone on the radio and actually broadcast, in by no means cultured tones, that the country is like a lemon and the unions are going to squeeze the last drop of juice out. Well, as long as that attitude prevails, the country, and the world, has little hope. The only thing to save the world now is a return to sanity, a return to the realization that the man should be earning the living and the woman should be the mother. The woman should stay at home doing the most noble task of all, instilling discipline and spiritual values into children who later will become adults and so in their turn will have to pass on knowledge and training. The world lacks religion. So many religions are busy fighting against each other. The Christian, for example, well, it should be that Christianity is Christianity. Instead, the Church of England and the Church of Rome hail it as a great spiritual victory when they can speak politely to each other. They are all Christians, aren't they? What is wrong with them? Why do they treat members of any other sect as criminals, as people bound for hell? What does it matter if a person is a Jew, a Christian, a Buddhist, or a Hindu? They all believe in their own form of religion, don't they? and as such their own form of religion should be respected. It seems that the Catholic world is much the same as communism. The communists try to inflict their belief on everyone regardless of the other person's wishes. The Catholics, also, try to force their religion down another person's throat, and they utter direful threats of eternal torment, eternal damnation, and all that rot. Believe me when I say that there is no such thing as hell. Believe me when I say that all roads lead the same way home. You have to die whatever your religion. You will die if you have no religion, just the same as the Pope himself. And all that matters is, have you lived your life according to your own personal belief? You won't find a fat priest ready to answer for your sins after. He won't take the blame for anything. You are strictly on your own. What you do and what you do not is not your own responsibility entirely, and you answer to yourself only, not to an avenging judge who is going to sentence you to an eternity in hell. No. There is nothing like that. You criticize yourself, and, believe me, there is no harsher critic of your actions than yourself. But everyone gets a chance, and a fresh chance and another chance after that. This is getting away from our subject, however. We need spiritual discipline. A religion is a useful thing for inculcating spiritual discipline, provided the religious leaders are not fighting among themselves. All the present-day religions fall down on the job, and so all the present earth religions shall, before too long, pass away like shadows disappearing in the night, and a fresh religion shall come to this earth which shall help lift people out of the darkness and the misery into which they have now sunk. But the time is not yet. The final battle is not yet. First there is more suffering, more disturbances in this, the age of Kali, disturbances caused by World War I, in which women deserted their homes and their children and left those children to run wild on the streets. If you get a wonderfully kept orchard, an orchard on which great care and endless expense has been lavished, and you suddenly withdraw all care from that orchard, everything soon becomes third-rate. The fruit no longer has the bloom and the fullness of constant care; instead that fruit becomes wrinkled and bitter. People are getting like that. People are now of inferior stock, and soon there will have to be the leaving process again so that fresh blood is brought to the earth. But first there will be more suffering. First the whole world will be engulfed by a form of communism. Not the communism of China, where even clocks and cars are supposed to run by the illustrious thoughts of Chairman Mao Zedong, and where, apparently, if a person has some interior obstruction he just thinks of old Mao Zedong, and there is such a disturbance that everything is cleared away immediately. So Earth is in for a sickener, Earth is in for a bad time, let's face it frankly. Everything is going to be engulfed in this form of communism. Everyone will be given a number; they might even lose their names and identities. All these strikes are going to price things out of existence. The unions are gaining more and more power, and eventually they will take over. That will be a major step towards the ruination of the earth. Eventually the press lords, like the robber barons of old, will mobilize their private armies of press workers, and they will go to even lower depths in their attacks on people, attacks which are so difficult to stand against when even the meanest type of reporter can write things in the columns of his paper and the attacked person has no redress whatever. This isn't justice. This isn't fair. And it's this type of subhuman person who is ruling the earth today and will bring the earth down even lower and lower. Until, having unnecessarily touched rock bottom in this, the age of Kali, the indomitable spirit existing in some people will shudder with the shock and the shame of what has fallen upon the earth, and the spirit will revolt and will take action which will enable earth and the peoples of earth to rise again. But it may be necessary for the peoples of space, the gardeners of earth, to come and give assistance. This is the age of assassination. A great religious leader, Martin Luther King, was assassinated. He was a good man and had much to give to this earth. As for the others, well, they were just political people, and, I do not want to tread on anyone's toes, history will prove that these were dwarfs raised to giant stature only by the appalling power of their advertising machine, an advertising machine which blew out a lot of stinking hot air and made dwarfs appear like giants, Just as you can get a toy soldier and by placing a light behind him you can make his shadow giant size on the wall behind. But here, too, the toy soldier's shadow is a shadow only, something without substance, something that soon will be forgotten. Martin Luther King was no shadow. He was a good man, working for the good, not only of colored people but of people of all colors throughout the world. For, in persecuting blacks, or browns, or reds, or yellows, the white people who are doing the persecuting are placing a terrible amount of karma upon themselves individually and collectively, and whatever they are doing now to the colored people will have to be atoned for in suffering and toil and humility. There would still be time to save this earth from its degradation, from its shame, if only women would return to their homes and look after the children and see that those children had proper training, because it is the lack of training which makes it possible for assassins to go about their filthy work. It is the lack of training which enables race riots to take place, and looting, and rape. These things were not common in the days when women had more than equality at home, when she occupied the supreme place of honor as mother to her family. It would be much, much better if the criterion of womanhood could be, how well behaved are her children? How contented is her husband? How useful is this woman to the community? Is she an example to others? If so, she is a woman to be proud of. Now, sad to say, a woman is judged by her mammary development, whether they stick up or down, how accessible they are, and how many husbands she has had. Sex is a wonderful thing, but this isn't sex. The people who go in for this type of thing are immature. They don't know anything about love, but only about the most functional aspects of procreation, and then, interestingly enough, most of these sex queens are as impotent as a eunuch who has been treated twice by mistake. If all of us could issue a prayer that a great leader would come to earth and help to straighten out the mess, that great leader would come, not with flaming sword and embattled hosts, because wars never settle anything, wars just make misery, wars make more troubles. It's not necessary to have any of those things. The way of peace is the best, and the best way to get peace is to get women back in the homes teaching decency to the male members of the family. They can do it, you know. Remember the old saying? A woman who is good is very good, but a woman who is bad is worse than any man could ever be, no matter how bad. Chapter 6. A pale sun shone wanly down through a widening gap in the slowly dispersing clouds. The mountain heads were invisible, hidden in white fleecy softness which billowed, cleared, and descended again as if reluctant to loosen its all-enshrouding grasp of the steep mountain sides. Below, the valley of Lhasa was gleaming, newly washed by the recent torrential downpour. Innumerable frogs sat on the banks of the lake, croaking away in thankfulness for the flood of insects who had been washed from the leaves of distant trees, and then fallen, willy-nilly, into the ever-waiting mouths below. The willow sighed and rustled gently as the raindrops trickled down from the topmost leaves, and then sank with soft musical plops into the waters of the lake. The golden roofs of the Potala gleamed whitely under the subdued sunlight, and from the city of Lhasa there sprang a rainbow which began at the Jokang Cathedral, arced all the way up into the clouds. The formerly deserted Linga Road, the Ring Road, was now filling up with people again. They had vanished into any available shelter when the rains came teeming down, almost drowning the countryside and swelling the river, making it almost burst its banks. Even now, great torrents of water were rushing down the mountainsides, and slowly the level of the lakes and the marshes crept up. With little gurgling moans, land which had been dry, and even parched, for weeks past now greedily absorbed the unexpected supply of rainwater. On the happy river the boatman, astride his inflated skin ferry, was looking anxiously at the sky, worrying lest fresh torrents of rain should make it impossible for him to cross the river. For a skin boat leaves much to be desired in the way of safety, and it is so easy to slide off and plummet into the water. Ferrymen, like sailors the world over, rarely know how to swim, and this ferryman had no conception of that art. But the road was filling up again. Household monks going about their task of getting supplies from the marketplace of Lhasa. water-bearing monks scampering down the rocky path to the little well, now overflowing, and then trudging slowly, tiredly up that path again carrying the essential water, for the Potala and for Chakpori too. For Chakpori, although much smaller in population, used for its size a vast amount of water because of the preparations of herbs and other forms of medical treatment. On the road lamas went about their business. High lamas with their retinue of waiting monks, and others who disdained the trappings of rank, rode on in solitary splendor or with just one attendant following. Traders, with grunting yaks, made their slow way through the western gate and on the last stage of their journey to Lhasa. Traders avid for profit, but avid for talk. Avid, too, for the open-mouthed wonderment with which some of their stories would be heard. From the other direction, from the city itself, other traders were setting out to climb the mountain passes and to make their slow way through snow-laden rock surfaces where a slip would mean death, and then, the dangers surmounted, they would eventually, in days or weeks, reach India, reach Kalimpong, and other trade centers. About to pass each other, arriving traders and departing traders would exchange a shouted conversation, giving the state of the market, the latest news, the disposition of the people. By the side of the Parbotling, beggars sat, moaning and calling for alms. Calling for all the blessings possible on those who gave, and all the maledictions imaginable on those who refused to give. Tourists and pilgrims thronged the road, going right round the Potala, and circling the lake and the great rock in which were carved religious figures, and which were kept gaily colored. Pilgrims and tourists, the doves, and among them the hawks, those who preyed upon the pilgrim and the tourist, those who sold horoscopes saying that each horoscope was personally prepared under the direction of a high lama. And all the time those horoscopes had been bought in bulk, after having been printed in India. Here, perched upon a convenient rock, stood an old man, calling forth to the tourists, "Look at this, look at this." He quoth, "Talismans and charms which have been personally seen and blessed by the inmost one. This will save you from the devils which afflict, this will save you from the illnesses which lay one low." He looked about, eager to spot a gullible person who would fall for that line of talk. A little distance away a woman stood, whispering to her husband, "Blessed by the inmost one." She whispered. "That must indeed command a high price," said the husband. "But we must have it. I am with child and we need a good talisman now to make sure that our child is born under happy auspices." Together, they moved towards the seller of talismans who, seeing their eagerness, moved towards them, and as they met he drew them to one side, to a little glove of willows, so that he could discuss the price and get all that the market would bear. Having made their purchase, the husband and wife walked away hand in hand, smiling contentedly, thinking that now they had protection bestowed by the blessing of the inmost one of the very sacred talisman. And the seller of talismans? He hurried away to take up his post again, and tell the old tale of the talismans and the charms that would bring good luck. "Tell me," said the letter, "where can I get a really good talisman that will bring me good fortune and protect me from ill? I have seen many advertisements in the so-and-so magazine, but I do not know what I should buy." "Well, the best thing is to buy none. None of these talismans or charms are worth anything at all. Now, let us be reasonable about this. If things are just mass-produced, stamped out by the thousands, probably untouched by human hand, they can have no effect at all. When, in the lamaseries, I was taught that the only way to make a good talisman or a good charm was to make it personally, and imbue it with a personality, or thought entity. I state emphatically that any commercially made charm or talisman is just a waste of money. Let me tell you a simple little story. Some time ago I received a small packet from a man in the USA. He wrote to me as well, and said that he had sent me a piece of bark from a very special tree in Ireland. He said it was guaranteed to bring good luck and protect me from evil. The piece of bark came to me in a special envelope, and there was a folder with it. There was also the picture of a small tree. The folder went on to say that for over 300 years pieces of bark had been cut from this tree, and had been sold all over the world. Wherever there were people, said the folder, these pieces of bark had been sent. Thousands of pieces, millions of pieces. Now, I ask you, what sort of tree can supply bark for 300 years and not die? What sort of tree can supply millions of pieces of bark, and keep on healing and growing? I turned the thing over in my hands, and by psychometry I came to the inescapable conclusion that someone was pulling a fast one by buying up bark from trees which had been felled, and with a punch cutting out pieces about the size of a $0.50, and sending them all over the world. The profit must have been truly enormous. What a pity, I thought, that I am an honest man. That's the way to raise money for research. But, sadly enough, honesty prevails, and it always will in the end, you know. There is no virtue in charms or talismans which have been mass-produced, either by stamping out of metal, or casting in metal, or printing. They are quite useless. The only talismans or charms which have any use whatever are those which have actually been made, and a thought form built into each individual charm. It can be done, and it is done. But it cannot be done on a commercial basis because the time alone would make a charge of a couple of $100 utterly necessary. Perhaps I should explain here that rampant touchstones are a different thing altogether. They are not charms, they are not talismans. They are special devices which are used by one owner, and which quickly generate great force, and which help that one owner. They cannot be used by two people, and, as thousands of letters testify, they really do work. But, they are not talismans, they are not charms, they are something absolutely different. This and That magazine have all these advertisements about the star of this, or the star of that, or the circle of something else. Well, I suppose people have to live, and they should remember, caveat emptor, which means, of course, let the buyer beware. Magazines make their income from advertising, and I assume that the advertising editor of a magazine reads the advertisements with his eyes shut if there is any possibility that they won't really be suitable. Remember, then, that if you go and buy a talisman or charm, well, you have done some good to someone, possibly, in turning over some good money for a bad object. It really is a fact, however, that if one wants a talisman or charm, call it what you will, it can be made if you know how, if you have the time, the patience, and the determination. You do not get it made overnight. It takes time, the time depending upon the effect you want. You will have heard of curses put on old Egyptian tombs, or certain artifacts of antiquity which have a spell or curse upon them. These things are real, they are not just imagination. What happened was that people who knew how to set about it made a thought form, and magnetized it to the object to be protected. The thought form comes into action when certain conditions are present. That is, if a person is trying to steal the artifact, thoughts are emanated from the would-be thief, and those thoughts trigger the preconditioned automatic response of the thought form. So the would-be thief drops dead of apparent heart failure, or something like that. It is a long and complicated process, and one which cannot be duplicated by mass production methods. From which it is very obvious that a lot of those silly little charms which are advertised are not worth buying unless you want them for a talking point. Now there is an interesting question. Since living in an apartment building I have not been so well. An old countrywoman told me that it was because I lived off the ground. Is that really true? Yes, it is. It is very, very true. Let's look at the problem, shall we? The earth, in one sense, is a magnet. It is a ball which contains magnetic forces of varying degrees of intensity. Anyone knows that there is a North Pole and a South Pole. People are taught that from earliest school days. But not so many know that continental masses and islands, and, in fact, everywhere, have their own particular amount of magnetism. It is easily measured that gravity, a form of magnetism, is different in various parts of the world, and it is constantly measured that magnetism is different everywhere. Ships' compasses, for example, can read differently in the varying ports throughout the world. And on many coastlines one can see two white cones, usually of pyramid shape, and so sighted that when viewed from a certain distance and a certain position at sea they form just one apparently solid bar of white.